Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Laura, who was one of the first knitters to come forward and agree to knit booties for our hermitages and has agreed to be on tonight to talk to us about that. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks, Jan. Happy to be here.
Great. So I'm looking at them right now and they're beautiful. We just opened them in the mail the other day. I wish I could, you know, I wish it was a video show so we could show them to people, but they're blue with green edging around the top, and they have these lovely buttons on the sort of on the top of the foot, and I just love them. So first let me say thank you so much for putting the time and care into making them for us.
Oh, thank you. Those buttons actually were left over from a sweater that I knit for my grandson, and I thought, I'm just going to use them for something fun. So there they are on the slippers.
Oh, that's great. So I thought first I'd give a little background for people who may not have heard that I suppose it was 6 months or so ago when we started really in earnest working on our hermitages to get them ready for the retreat season, which we're now in peak retreat season currently. And so one of the things we realized is, of course, we ask, much like all of our indoor spaces, we ask that folks take their shoes off before they go into the hermitages and place them on a little mat. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to have something, especially in the cooler, you know, cool mornings and in the spring times and the fall times, to put something cozy on their feet. And so we started looking around for where to buy some knitted booties. And we thought, gosh, that doesn't seem like the way to go. Since we're all about participation, let's just see if there's anyone in the Sangha who would want to do it. So we put an email out, and the response has been tremendous. It's just been overwhelming. And so, as I say, yours were actually the second pair that we received in the mail. And I wondered if you might speak a little bit to kind of what inspired you to step forward and want to participate in that way.
Well, when I first heard about it, Jen, I just thought, oh, I can do that. And I knit a fair amount. I usually have two or three projects on the go at a time. And, of course, each project usually has some yarn left over. And so I have this little stash of leftover yarn, not enough to make, you know, like a scarf or, you know, something big. And so I just, you know, I just had this little leap of the heart, like not only will it be fun to make slippers for other Sangha members, but, you know, it'll use up my leftover yarn and be a fun project to do for me, too.
So it was kind of one of those, all the factors came together.
Yeah, and I was also traveling 12 time zones, and so I was looking for, a project to do on the plane that would be simple, that I could pretty much do without having to see anything and just knit by feel. And so I found this very simple slipper pattern, and that was the final piece of it.
Uh-huh. You know, that was a fun piece of it. I don't know if you'd be willing to say more about that, but that you wouldn't need to see it, that you would knit by feel. Can you say more about that?
Well, I mostly knit by feel because I've got very limited vision. And so the patterns that I choose are only complicated if I have the time to use my great big video magnifier and actually put what I'm knitting underneath it. And then it's magnified on a big, like a TV or a computer monitor.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of hard on my back, so I don't do very many of those projects, you know, maybe like, you know, a lacy little jumper for my granddaughter or something. And so I generally do simple projects like, you know, scarves or blankets or hats or something that isn't too complex. And it's also interesting because it's very relaxing for me, but it's also a great opportunity to pay attention, because if I make a mistake, it's not that easy to rip out knitting as it is crocheting, and I, you know, often have to knit out right to the very beginning and start over. So I'm very motivated to pay attention when I'm knitting.
Yeah, you know, that's what was occurring to me as you were describing it, especially that flying across 12 time zones. I can almost relate. I often fly 12 takes.
I thought of you flying to Africa. Uh-huh.
12 takes it to a new level. And actually, I confess that there, on more than one occasion, I've had the fantasy of getting one of the gals, one of our buddies in Cantaloupe, to teach me either crocheting or knitting. Because to have something like that, there you are in the airplane, and, you know, just hour after hour after hour, and not really wanting to watch all those movies or read books, or but wanting to just be there, and having something like a knitting project or something that uses the hands and gives the attention a place to be, seems like mm-hmm. such a great awareness practice.
The other kind of side effect of that, which is really a lot of fun, is I meet other knitters. And so we were flying home from France, and there just happened to be a knitter sitting across the aisle, and we struck up this great conversation and compared patterns. And my husband turned to me and said, "Oh, you've met another member of the knitting cult."
Exactly. Yeah, isn't that fun? That when we're sort of engaged in the things that we love to do, we attract people who share those same interests.
That's so true. Uh-huh.
So that's really fun. And then as you were doing the project, having the added benefit, well, two things it sounds like. One, having sort of things lying around that you weren't sure what to do, balls of yarn and that kind of thing that weren't enough for another project and not knowing quite what to do with them. And so how fun that they could actually be enough to do a project that was really going to make a difference. And then knitting something for Sangha, and so for a place that you really care about and want to participate with.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing that I really focus on when I'm knitting is whoever I'm making it for, I just send a lot of loving kindness their way. And so it's, you know, it really feels to me, you know, not to sound too schmaltzy or anything, but like a work of love. It's made with love.
Well, I'll tell you that came right through for me when I opened that package. I just had the biggest smile on my face. And as you say, imagining putting them in a hermitage that, you know, the hermitage has been put together with such care, it's been cleaned with such care, you know, the flower, the little flower arrangements that we create for each hermitage,
mm-hmm.
and then to put these, you know, beautiful booties that someone in the Sangha, so you've made these two pairs and someone else is going to make a pair and someone else will make these two pairs and so forth, and that each one has been made, you know, with love and care and attention by someone else in the Sangha just seems like such a great metaphor for practicing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree, Jen.
Yep. And you know, the
makes
other
me want to go knit some more.
Yeah, I know. Well, me, as I say, I really, when I opened them up, I thought, oh, I am going to get Josephine to teach me how to do this.
Oh,
I want to
great.
Know how. And just the last thing about it for me that's really fun is that there's so many ways to participate with Sangha, you know. There's coming on retreat that we talk about a lot. There's being a monthly donor and participating with financial contributions. There's being on the radio show in all kinds of ways. But how fun that, you know, something like knitting could be a way of participating with Sangha.
Mm-hmm. The options are endless.
They are. It's true. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Laura. Well, thank you so much for being on with us tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You're most welcome. Take good care.
Yeah, you too.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Laura. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Justin, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Good, good. How about yourself?
Great. It's great to hear your voice.
Likewise. Yep.
Yeah. Very fun.
Things are going good. We're having kind of big times here, as you can imagine. Our retreat season is in full swing.
Yes.
So it's fun, actually. You know, that previous conversation, in a way, is a part of that because, you know, as was said, you know, we're getting the place ready and trying to keep it ready, trying to keep it clean. You know, just after a lot of preparation this winter, and then lots of little kind of fun things about it, like those booties, where people are kind of helping out and participating, you know, little sort of win-win-win opportunities show up here and there, so it makes it really fun.
That's great. Yeah, I can just imagine when I come to the monastery of seeing, you know, every little bit of it and knowing that somebody with loving care took care of this and somebody with loving care built that, and really how my life is supported by everyone's efforts.
That's so true. And ours, too. I speak for myself, and I'm sure I can speak for the other monks in this, that it is really, really good practice. You know, the guide has been modeling attention to every single detail, you know, down to the littlest, tiny, nitty-gritty, whatever it is, and which is so much a Zen attitude of mine. And so, you know, we're attempting to have the whole property represent our practice and represent that kind of ability to pay attention. And it's challenging because, you know, it's a big property and there's just endless details. They're all over the place.
Yes.
But to be able to, so anyway, that's what I've been practicing and learning about. And I think, I bet you that the other monks would say that also, you know, just being present to what's here and attending to it, even as small as, you know, you're walking by, you know, you're walking by the Hermitage, as was happening earlier for me earlier today, to do something, you know, delivering a propane tank, and there's a little pile of weeds right by the door to the Hermitage. So on the way by, I'll just scoop them up, so like that. And so, and not that, I mean, I think it's, you could say we do it for the place, we do it for the people who come here, but most of all, at least for me, we do it for our own practice, you know, to be able to practice being in that attitude of mind where we're just really present to what's there.
Yeah, wonderful.
And it's fun, too, having, you know, we've got lots of people coming through, and, you know, it's everybody, I think, who comes through here, we could say, oh, that's my very favorite person. And then they just kind of show up. You know, boy, I haven't seen, you know, here comes so-and-so. I haven't seen them in months. And then, you know, hear what they're saying in group, and you can hear the sound of the sauce going in the background probably. you know, hear what they're saying in group and realize, you know, we're all out there practicing. Everybody. You know, through the whole country and really all over the world, we're all practicing. And then every once in a while, we get to see each other in person and practice together.
Yes. Yes, it is a gift to get together in person. Wonderful. Justin, I have some announcements here.
Oh, okay, thanks, Michael.
We have a new retreat on the schedule. It's called the Your Practice Retreat. And it's designed for those who've been with practice for a while and gives participants the opportunity to practice as a monk for a week. And that's this summer, July 18th through 25th.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
Great, great. And then the weekend of July 13th through 15th, Sherry will be at the Shambhala Mountain Center in Colorado for a workshop titled Awareness, It's Not What You Think. And folks can visit schedule at livingcompassion.org to read more or sign up for any of these retreats.
And we'd love to see you.
Yes, yes. And a couple of reminders for folks to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
So you're welcome. Let's get started. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Zoe from Buffalo.
Hey, Zoe.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really good. I'm just calling to say hi and thank you.
That's a great reason to call. Anything going on?
Yeah, I want to participate, you know.
Say that again?
I said, oh, and I want to participate too. Yeah,
of course. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
So I'm coming on retreat in August, and I thought about asking, like, kind of, about next steps, like after that, or if I should just call back after that and find out, like, what else I should come to after the Not What But How in August.
Oh, you're coming to the Not What But How?
Yeah.
That's great. Have you done the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat?
Yep. Last April.
Last April. Okay, that's good. Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go, but one of them is, I don't know if you've started in on the recording and listening practice that's out there?
Yeah, I have. I've been doing that. I think I'm on my third recorder or something.
Oh, okay, great. Well, there's a retreat called What You Practice Is What You Have. Actually, I think the last one for the year is coming up now that I think about it, so it'll be too late after August for this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I tried to sign up for that, and then the registration told me to go to the Not What But How instead. So
I thought,
well, maybe I'll go to What You Practice Is What You Have, like 2013, if you guys are still offering it.
I bet you anything that we still will. It's a really great retreat. And, yeah, I can see that. I mean, you're on really kind of the ideal path, I think, at least as far as I can tell. And I've heard other people say this, too. You know, do There's Nothing Wrong With You and Not What But How, and then kind of move on to What You Practice, which is sort of, I think Sherry looks at it as the sequel to There's Nothing Wrong With You. And so it's good to kind of get that kind of practice under your belt with those other two retreats and then do that one. You know,
yeah.
Another one that would be a really good, if you're up for something else this year, is the New Year's retreat.
Oh, yeah. definitely. That sounded like a great one to go to. So,
it really is. Yeah. It really is. And it's fun, too. It's big. And, yeah, it's a really fun time. And it's in a beautiful place. It's down in the North Bay area, and it's just quite a nice thing. So, short answer is, you know, I think you kind of got it earlier, you know, just participating in anything is the way to go. But there's some really good opportunities out there.
Thank you very much. I don't want to take too much of your time. I just wanted to call and say hi and thank you and maybe throw that out there too. So.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and thanks for your participation. You know, it takes all of us. I'm curious, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that we do that's remote, like the Reflective Listening Buddies, there's email classes. Do you participate in any of those things?
Yeah.
Okay, so you really got your bases covered. That's great.
I try. I missed the last at-home working meditation retreat because I had something scheduled already before it,
mm-hmm.
you know, the date came out. And I know the next one's like in October. So I did one of those, and that was really great too. So.
Yeah, boy, they're really fun, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for calling in. It's great to hear your voice.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Zoe. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Dave.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello. This is Gwen in Texas.
Hey, Gwen.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Hi, Michael. I am great. I'm coming to the retreat. There, What You Practice Is What You Have.
Yay.
And I am really looking forward to that. And I do have a kind of a situation I'm not real sure how to handle, and I was hoping to get some insight.
Okay. What's going on?
I don't even know exactly how to express it. I didn't plan this. I just decided I would call and get some insight on it. I have some people that I work with who are Baptists, and they have decided that because I am going to a Buddhist retreat, that I am joining a cult.
Okay.
And they are on a mission to save my soul, and I'm just not really sure how to handle it. I've tried to explain, you know, that Buddhism doesn't tell you you cannot be any other religion. It's
mm-hmm.
not a cult.
Mm-hmm.
But I just would like someone else's input on it.
Mm-hmm. How do they respond when you say those kind of things?
Oh, they think I'm brainwashed.
I see. Well, you know, there's a lot of ways to go about it. I'll tell you something that popped in my head as you said that. I haven't thought about this in years, but when I was a brand new monk, I've been here maybe like a year or so, I was up walking on the road out beyond the monastery gates and was approached by two Jehovah's Witnesses. I think that's the right word for it, you know, with the white shirts and the ties and everything. And they were, you know, wanting to talk to me about, you know, what they do. And we had, as I recall it, the best conversation about it, because you know, the way I looked at it, just kind of instinctively, is, you know, what I need to do here is be the practice that I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? I want to be it instead of really talk about it. And so, you know, I just listened to them, and attempted to put aside any kind of notions I had about what was going on with them or what they were trying to offer to me, and just be the practice as best as I could with them. And it was a really kind of a powerful experience with me, because I protected, they felt heard. I mean, I didn't obviously go and join whatever they wanted me to join, but that seemed kind of unimportant. And I felt like we connected as human beings in a way that was really helpful. So,
mm-hmm.
Don't know how much something like that applies to this situation, but I wonder, for example, how was it for you, just kind of in terms of your practice?
Well, I love both of these people very much, and I've worked with them for over 5 years, so
mm-hmm.
I know them very well. And until I went to the retreat last year, religion had never entered that much into our discussions,
mm-hmm.
because I understood, their very strong opinions about what's right and wrong, and, because I'm not a Christian specifically, then I'm damned to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have made it their mission. And I say, you have a right to your opinion, and I appreciate where you're coming from. And I see, Jesus was saying that wonderful things, but I believe in God. I just don't believe in Jesus Christ. I don't
mm-hmm.
want to go that way. But I try to stay aware of myself and not offend them, because I do not find them offensive. It's it's just repetitive, and and they look at me with such sad eyes and just say, "When you're going to go to hell?" I keep saying, "Well, I don't think so,"
Right? Have you tried reflective listening?
Well, I've said, well, it sounds like you're really concerned for my soul, and I appreciate that, because I love you too, But it's like they won't give it up.
Uh-huh.
It's like until I agree with them, they're not going to stop.
Right. Or until they see that maybe something is happening with you that they recognize as what happens with them with their religion. In other words,
mm-hmm.
They would have to, I don't know the people, they would have to be open to this, but, if you've known them for some time, and they obviously care about you on some level, or else they wouldn't be, kind of going through this in relationship to you. So, mm-hmm. I wonder, for example, if as they attempt to do this thing with you, if they keep running into somebody who is open to them, who loves them unconditionally despite that, who doesn't have her own sort of assumptions about them and what they believe that is kind of thrown back at them, that doesn't engage with them in a way that is kind of confrontational, like that. Someone who, in other words, is at center. I wonder after a while if they might recognize that on some level.
Mm-hmm. They just think I'm going to go to hell.
Right. Yeah. Well, they've, hard to know how to talk about it without kind of.
Mm-hmm. Their belief system is so different, and they're on a mission, and I really don't know how to get them to stop. I guess I can just say, please stop.
Or, you could. I mean, you'll have to explore, obviously, how to make this thing work. Now, another kind of tact you can take, I know this just from my personal experience in dealing not with, people on religious issues, but people who are close to me who have some kind of strong feelings about what I'm doing and like that, who want to tell me about it. And, if you really were to do the reflective listening and just not stop, Not even I hear that you think I'm going to hell, but I love you, but even just, so what I hear you saying is, and then just say back to them in their own words, and then what I hear you saying is, and then say it back to them in their own words, sooner or later, it will have to end in some way.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. And what the, I mean, you'll have to see, but that's what, in situations like that, that's what I've done. It's been quite effective because it does a number of different things. One is it allows you to continue to treat them respectfully, which seems really important. It really helps. Have you, I think you're familiar with reflective listening, right? Have you practiced that?
Recording and listening?
No, reflective listening.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm a counselor. I actually use reflective listening frequently in sessions. But
okay, there you go.
When you're caught in the tangle, sometimes it's hard to remember to use it in your personal life.
It really is hard to remember because, see, it's the tangle that's the problem. Not that there's really a problem, but that's what where the difficulty is. And also, in my experience, that's where the unpleasantness is. That's what's so unpleasant about those kinds of interactions is because we get tangled up in, you know, it's they've got their conditioning, it brings up my conditioning, our two conditionings get tangled together, and then we're just kind of not having a very good time. So what reflective listening does is, as I'm sure you're aware, if you really are reflecting, if you're not bringing in your own stuff to it, what it does, it basically is it assists a person to be at center. Because you're letting go of all of your own beliefs and assumptions, your own belief systems, and any attitudes you have, and any way you want to kind of act out of your own conditioning, and you, because you have to do that in order to be present enough to hear what they say and then just say it back to them. So it allows you to be respectful. It allows them to feel heard. So it's not that you're not hearing them. That's not why you're not willing to be converted. It's just that you don't see things the same way they do. And it allows you to be at center.
You know, I hadn't thought about perhaps my own conditioning coming into it in the background.
Yeah. Well, it's very likely it's at least is attempting to in some way. I mean, if these interactions are really, if they're unpleasant for you, then it's very likely that's what it is. It's, you know, it's always our own stuff that is difficult, not anybody else's ultimately.
Mhm. Because if my conditioning weren't involved, I would just be observing it.
Yeah.
Rather than emotionally reacting to it, right?
Yep, for sure. Yeah. Is that that emotional reaction? That's the killer. And of course, there's a lot more going on than just that. There's the emotional reaction. There's all the stories that go on. You know, there's the, you know, and depending on what the situation is, you know, the upset or the frustration, you know, any of those kinds of things. You know, that's how we get caught up into what, you know, the Buddha talked about as suffering. You know, we're kind of off separate from everyone and everything in our own little universe, believing a story that really doesn't have anything to do with what's going on. And so, you know, in this situation, I think, and probably with any situation, what we're attempting to do is be at center in it. You know, not being going off into our own conditioning, believing our own story, and basically being in our, you know, trapped in our own belief system in the way that it seems like other people are. The reason I threw reflective listening in there is because it's just such a great assist in being able to do that. As you say, it's incredibly challenging to remember when we're in our own kind of personal situations because our conditioning gets stirred up, and it's really hard to remember when our conditioning gets stirred up. But to remember something like that and remember to reflect, it could be really, really powerful for you, and it might even be powerful for the other people when they see, you know, here's someone who, you know, she doesn't see things the way that we do, but she is doing something that we really admire.
Okay, I'm going to have to listen to this again, Dave.
Okay. Yeah, and give it a little practice too. You know, if you well, it sounds like you do that regularly in your counseling sessions. But a lot of times I'll practice with people who, you know, I just like the clerk at the grocery store or whatever, just practice a little reflective listening just to kind of stay tuned up, because it's really handy to have in these other kind of situations.
Well, I think I do it so much at work that I forget that I can also do it in my own life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's good.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. And, yeah, it'll be fun. Maybe after you practice a little bit, it'd be fun to if you called back in and told us how it went.
All right. Well, I'm going to get another chance to try this reflective listening this week.
Okay, good.
With the same
good.
Situation again.
Great. Yeah, well, that'll turn it from something that you might dread or not look forward to into something you might look forward to as a practice opportunity.
Yes, I will. I am.
All right, good.
And well, if I don't get the report back on the phone, I'll report at the retreat. So
perfect.
I'm really looking forward to the retreat. Yay!
Yeah, I can't wait to see you. Yeah. Take care. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gwen. You're listening to Open Air. It's our pleasure to have with us Justin tonight, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And Justin, we have another caller.
Alrighty.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jodine calling from San Francisco.
Hey, Jodine.
Hey. I'm calling because I committed to call once a month for a while, and I'm very proud that I did it this month.
Yay.
Yay. And I called, I think, on May 1st, and so it makes it real easy, like, you know, the beginning of the month.
Beginning of the month, time to call in.
Yeah. So, and it's been kind of an interesting practice, like, oh, what am I going to talk about? You know, that conversation gets started. And it kind of turned into, like, for me, like, someone questioning, what is going on with me? Like, how would I put that?
It really, I think what you're saying is that it causes you to look kind of more deeply at it and see what's really going on.
It does. It definitely does. Like, get below the daily, the noise of the daily, you know, static, and then, you know, what's going on. And what I've come to, or what's up right now, is there's been a little synchronicity in my life where I've heard a couple of stories. Like, I read a book, and I saw a movie, and then I saw this news item about people who've encountered difficulties in their life and use the difficulty to kind of turn things around or go in a new direction. You know the saying of life hands you a lemon, you can make lemonade?
Yep. It's a really handy skill to have, isn't it? Because life does have a way to throw us those lemons.
I guess where I'm at is kind of with a bushel of lemons or something. Somebody wants to think that. And I guess what I'm trying to sort out is, like, where is my heart in this, and where is conditioning? And basically, like, when I heard those stories and saw the movie, I recognized a script that goes on, the conditioning is telling me, where, if you could do that with your life, like them, and in fact, that must be your destiny somehow. Like, you must have encountered so much difficulty in your life, because you're destined to be part of one of these big turnaround stories.
Okay. And where does it feel like that's coming from?
Well, I know that that piece is conditioning.
Okay. That seems clear, doesn't it?
Yeah, because obviously, like, I wouldn't say I've done that. Conditioning wouldn't say I've done that. That's kind of interesting. Maybe I should look at my life from that point of view, like, maybe I've already done that.
Oh, gosh. I bet if you look through your life, I don't know much about your life, just a little bit about your life, but I bet you anything, if you look through your life, I bet you would see that everywhere from the very beginning. that you've encountered difficulties. I don't even know if difficulties is the right word, because it's just so much a part of how life is, through challenges. You know, life, I mean, you think about it, ever since we were knee-high and before, there's been these challenges that have been put in our way, and we have sort of taken on those challenges and used those challenges to, you know, to grow and to move into the next thing that's possible for us. And then, of course, the next thing that happens is there's another one for challenge, and then we do the same thing with that. And that's kind of how we get to be where we are today.
Yeah. You know, that's something that the word that popped up is rewrite. Like, maybe I should write the story of my life from conditioning's point of view and then rewrite it.
Yeah. I think that's great, because probably, I bet you, it's being written in your head all the time by conditioning.
Well, that's the thing that it is, and conditioning focuses on things like, it's really interesting. Many years ago, like 12 years ago, I went to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat for the first time. And I had a really life-changing insight in that retreat, which was that I was living the story of something very traumatic that happened to me over and over again in my head every single day.
Wow. And so the trauma is happening over and over again every single day, in effect.
Yeah. And it was so in my face that it did not come out until this one part of the retreat made it so clear what was happening. And it almost was like the earth moved, you know, and I suddenly saw myself doing that, and realized that I had not, you know, I couldn't, or conditioning, I don't know what, could not let go of that.
Right. And so to extrapolate from that to today, I think where your head it is, or I'm guessing where your head it is, that really it may be not in quite such a dramatic form, but that same thing is happening all the time, isn't it? That conditioning is fabricating a story that we're living in, which always has some kind of awfulness inside of it. You know, we're not measuring up. We're not getting where we're supposed to be in life. You know, there's something wrong with us. You know, somehow we're unfulfilled.
Yeah.
You know, just all that stuff that conditioning throws in, and it's completely made up. I mean, it has nothing to do with anything. You know, if we could really, you said this a minute ago, basically, but if
rewrite
we could
it.
Really rewrite it, if we could really step back to a place that is unconditioned and see our life kind of as a whole, oh, my gosh. I mean, what we would see basically is a miracle. You know, here's a human who has managed to not only come up to and go beyond the basic challenges that life puts in front of everybody, but in addition to that, this human has managed to deal with the conditioning that's there trying to sabotage everything from the very beginning. And it really is remarkable that we can be such beautiful people considering everything that we're up against.
Good point. Yeah, so the last thing I'd say is that I went on retreat in April and had a great, wonderful experience at the monastery. And I had wanted a practice bracelet for the longest time, but I just couldn't decide what to put on it. you know, oh, this, oh, that, whatever. And I'm sure conditioning was in there too, like it had to be perfect or something. But what I finally settled, well, I have two, and one of them says no self.
That's
and
good.
It came up for me when what you were saying, like, look at this human being who's been through all this stuff and dealt with all this self-hate and everything that goes with that along with the hard things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess through the practice, I touch into this, I ask this question, or somebody asked the question, how would this look if there was no self?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the human is doing, what the human is experiencing today, what if there were no self having that? Taking on the, I see it as like, taking on the conditioning.
Yeah.
Well,
there would be no suffering, would there?
Well, that's what I like touch into now and then.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, the possibility you're pointing at, that beyond the stories that conditioning is kind of putting there all the time. In a way, it's even more than rewriting it. It's letting go of a need to live in a story at all, isn't it? You know, who cares what's happened in the past? I mean, there's really no way to look at that. Well, that's not true. The habitual way to look at it is from a place of self-hate and judgment, as you were saying. I mean, we can look at that and we can kind of step back and see, you know, the human that's been there, and then, you know, it feels to me like the next step is, you know, why don't we just let that go and let's just be here, just trusting that we are exactly where we need to be and life will take us exactly where we need to go.
Mm.
Which I think is that place of no self that you're talking about.
Yeah, which is not really a place, but, so can you think of anything that I could do with recording and listening to support around this? Because what happens is I just fall into the story and I just am right there believing it and suffering over it.
Well, I'll tell you what comes to mind is you just kind of going back to the basic reassurances.
Mm.
Because that does that for me.
Okay.
You know, I love you. I'm here with you. You're doing super. You know, I just think you're wonderful. It doesn't matter how it goes. I love you anyway. That kind of stuff takes me exactly to that place where, I don't feel the need to believe a self-hating story because I know there's somebody there who can see me as I really am. You know, see me differently than the conditioning does.
Okay.
So anyway, you could try it. The reason it comes up for me is because that's something I'm doing myself. I'm making a bunch of recordings that are really just kind of those basic reassurances recordings, and I just love to listen to them.
Great.
Yeah, it feels like a real antidote to that self-hating story that tries to follow us around.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Justin.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Okie dokie.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
It's Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think open air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about open air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have another caller here.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, let's try the next one. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hey, Dustin. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. I'm pretty good.
You're pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah. What's I'm looking
on?
At a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm doing a public speaking thing Thursday.
Wow.
And I've done quite a bit of speaking in front of people, but I got to this place where I wanted to do it a whole lot better than I had been doing it.
Okay.
And so what's been great about it is I've seen a lot of self-hate around the public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen, like, when I think about doing it, I see the projection onto the people and what they think of me.
I know that one. Don't you love it?
Yeah.
As if you
could
look like read their thoughts and all the judgment that they're thinking.
Right, right. So I was practicing my presentation and I kind of hit a wall with it. And then I was like, okay, well, what do I do? How can I make this better? You know, because I'm not a natural public speaker. I don't get up on stage and just immediately start, you know, have this charisma flowing out of me and
mm-hmm.
all
of that. Gotta work
at
it a little harder.
I wish I did have that.
Uh-huh.
So I was like thinking, how can I connect with the audience in my way? Like, what is my essence and how can I connect with them?
Mm-hmm.
And what I came up with was my sense of humor, because I have a really dry sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of have a dry, just personality in a way. But when you get to know me, it's like then people connect with me like that. So
uh-huh.
So I'm starting off the presentation with this dry sense of humor. And so when I started to look at it that way and looking at myself, it sort of turned it into the practice then, like I was then practicing with it. Are you there?
Yeah, say a little more. How do you mean?
Hello?
Hello, Renee?
I'm here. Did I lose you?
I'm not sure. Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear both of you fine.
Okay. Renee, can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, there we go. Must have something going off in the ether there. Yeah.
Okay. So that's when it turned into the process of it all and the practice.
So what I was asking, say a little bit more about that. How did that turn it into the practice for you?
Well, I don't know really, because I was like, I think because I was just looking at, well, what is it that would make this something that I would be doing that would be sort of striving to be excellent, thinking about the audience instead of me, you know, like the audience in terms of how can I make this message come alive, you know, versus my ego and worrying about what they think of me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So the part I'm curious about in the beginning, you know, so you said you had a desire to do it better than you've done it previously. Where do you feel like that came from?
Well, I think it's coming from where I want to serve the audience versus just stand up there and recite it.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So.
You know. Yeah.
So you saw, we might say, you saw a possibility in that for you of how you could be there. I don't know the best way to say it. You could sort of have you there. It sounds like, in front of everybody. And now you're sort of, the practice part of it is kind of learning to see how to do that exactly.
Yeah, well, it seems like it became not about me, but about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this is what I'm working with it. I'm working with all of this. You know, it's something new. I've always just kind of done the public speaking or the presentations, got through it, and, oh, good, that's over with. You know,
right. Yeah.
Didn't really put a lot into it. Just tried to get through it and did average and, you know, kind of went on with my life. And, but now I'm sort of inviting this into my life because there's things I want to do that are involving that presentations. And, and so I'm looking at it more as an opportunity to, see what I'm doing around it internally, you know.
There you go. That's the practice
and
part.
Yeah, and and then I started to notice how I was projecting, and when I'd go to rehearse it in my mind, like, you know how great athletes rehearse their like ski run or swim or whatever in their mind before over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was rehearsing it, and I was failing at it.
You're rehearsing your failure.
Exactly. Or not being great. You know, I was rehearsing like, this is not going to go right. And
oh, boy, that is so good to see, isn't it? There's no way that can go well.
Yeah. So I said, well, I need to rehearse this like as though I'm doing like wonderfully and, you know, and have the confidence and, you know, that I'm doing it in the best way that I know I can do it.
Yeah. And letting go, it sounds like, of kind of, it's the best way I can think of to say it is a subject-object relationship with it. You know, so there's you, kind of like a separate you. There's the audience, you know, so there's like these two kind of made-up entities. You know, here's what the audience is thinking, and then here's this sort of made-up me, and am I doing it well, and am I being how I'm supposed to be, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's where all the self-consciousness is, and the, you know, all that stuff that's difficult.
Yes, exactly.
So letting go of that, and so it sounds like the way you're letting go of that is you're watching what's going on with you internally as you do this, and I'm projecting that's causing you to disidentify, and then you start to experience, or at least you're kind of heading towards that area where sort of like what Jodine was talking about with that no self, where you know, the way you said it is, it's more kind of about the audience rather than me, and I think what you mean there is about the separate me. So it's not about the separate me and how the separate me is doing. It's more of you're connecting. And so you sort of kind of dissolve that separate self in that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just there in the event sort of channeling the, you know, whatever it is that you have to present.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, everything that you're saying is exactly what I'm going through in it, and it's just fascinating to watch it because it's such a new area that I'm practicing
uh-huh.
with.
Yeah.
And
it's,
yeah.
It's the best. I mean, I have the privilege of, you know, I do quite a bit of public speaking in a way, you could say,
mm-hmm.
Facilitation. And, you know, and our practice is a practice of facilitation in a lot of ways, especially the monastic practice, because once people arrive after they've been here for a little while, you know, pretty soon there's a facilitation training that happens. And it's for exactly the reason that you're saying, is because we can find out, you know, when we're in that, it's not exactly pressure, but it's a form of pressure, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in a spot where we really just can't get identified.
Mm-hmm.
The result is just too awful, you know, to get identified or,
yeah.
you know, self-conscious in front of a group of people. And we find out that if we just open the mind and open the mouth, this thing comes through that's bigger than we could have really thought of on our own. And it's beautiful, and it's fun to experience that happening inside of yourself.
Right. And I was sort of in the back of my mind going, what am I putting myself through this anxiety for? And, you know, like, and then it came to me, oh, well, it's like what you just said, this is a new way of practicing. It's totally different than anything you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see all these things about yourself. And
mm-hmm.
because I can actually watch myself, like, learning the material, because the material is it's a respectful communication program,
mm-hmm.
Training program
mm-hmm.
and for business. And
mm-hmm.
so it's got a lot of practice concepts in it that we already do.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see myself doing the separate self doing it, you know, preparing for it and saying it and reading it and even speaking it when I'm practicing. But then when I go into what you're talking about with the facilitation, I can feel it come alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of three-dimensional, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's
mm-hmm.
and it's almost like a little chaotic, like hard to hold on to it or something. Like, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but something like that.
Well, ego can't control it. I don't know if that's what you're pointing
yeah.
at.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. So there's no self-consciousness. So then it's like,
mm-hmm.
whoa. Like.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
it's
nothing monitoring that. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's
yeah.
This is fun. Yeah, this is one of my favorite things.
Because, yeah.
You know, my experience is, you know, you get to, there's like a threshold. Like, you know, for me, you know, maybe stepping out in front of a big group of people, there's, you know, as it's approaching, you know, there's kind of, you know, there's that self-consciousness and the you know, conditioning is basically trying to work up some kind of big thing I can suffer over later.
mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's trying to soften me up. But then there's that threshold, and then you kind of, you know, step out onto the stage, or you ask everyone to turn around in the room, or whatever it is that starts it. And then
mm-hmm.
suddenly this thing just starts happening that's completely different from that. And the,
mm-hmm.
you know, the voices go away, and then it's just, there's this event that happens. And it's, anyway, you know what I'm talking about. But that's, to put ourselves in a place where we can have that kind of experience is just so valuable, because we basically find out that there is no separate self. There is just this, you know,
mm-hmm.
being that's here, that's connected with life, that is sort of tapped into all the intelligence and all the words even that a person might need in that situation.
Yeah, it's very it's scary too.
Yeah, well, was it scary for you, or is it scary for conditioning?
I don't know. I would imagine it's scary for conditioning.
Yeah, probably very energetic
yeah.
for you.
Mhm. Mhm. Oh yeah. Yeah. Really energetic. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of energy.
Yeah, you definitely feel alive.
Yeah, that's good. It's there's a kind of a nice principle in what you're saying too. It doesn't apply particularly to public speaking, but for anything that we do that takes us past conditioned mind, you know, everybody's got something that mm-hmm. no, I can't do that. That's too scary or too big or too weird or too something. And then to, you know, to find the willingness to move into those places that conditioning says, you know, that conditioning draws a line and says, no, that is not you. You can't do that. And to move
right,
into that,
right.
those larger
yeah.
places it's critical, really, for us to be free, because, you know, it breaks that kind of dominating relationship that conditioning is trying to have over us all the time, and puts us in a place where we can really experience our own power in our lives.
And that is so helpful that you said that, because that is one of its stories, is you shouldn't be doing this. You're not, you know, you're not a public speaker. You're not, you know, animated enough. You're not this, you're not that. And this isn't something you should do. So it's really helpful that you just said that, because I'm going to prove that it is wrong.
You sure are. You already have. It sounds like, to a large degree.
Yeah. And, you know, that I think that's what this is about, what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, too.
Free.
And
yeah.
It's no surprise that you're hearing from the voices on this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a way, it's a kind of a sign that you're on the right track. You know, if it's upset about it and is not happy about what you're doing, pretty good chance you're heading in a direction that's away from it and towards something better.
Yeah. Oh, it does all kinds of things. It imagines the building I'm in falling over. It's pulled out all the stops. So.
Yeah.
But
well,
I've seen it before when I was in it. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. The tricky part for me is staying in that energy before the actual thing starts happening. And just being present in that energy, because that's the place where, we don't really know how to be in big energy like that. And so what we tend to do instead is just allow the mind to start spinning. And that's when conditioning can kind of get in there and really start to cook up some suffering. But to just be in there and just trust, you know, just lots
that's
of reassurances. Everything's going to be okay. I know it's going to be okay. Whatever happens is going to be okay. I could just look like a clown up there. And that's going to be okay, too. And just
totally. Yeah. I do that. Like, you know, I'm going to love you anyway, no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be fine no matter what happens, you know. And then staying in the energy, I totally saw that. Like, you know, yes, all that's coming up. And seeing it brings more energy. And if you can stay in it and don't, I mean, if, you know, even if I do get identified, that's okay. But if I can not get identified and watch it all, it is an incredible experience.
It is. And ego's taking big hits, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other one, do you know this trick, too? Where, you know, you get done with whatever it is, you walk off, then you never think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one? No reviews.
Yeah, I do know that one, and thanks to you guys.
Yeah, that one's
the
critical.
The Sangha telling me that over and over again, which I started practicing that a while ago after talking in group or whatever, you know. So I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you so much. This is really helpful.
Yeah, that's fun. It's fun. Fun to hear kind of stepping out of beyond the boundaries like that. Fun to hear about.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Renee.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Renette. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, we have another caller here.
All right, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, this is Mary Jane in San Francisco.
Hey, Mary Jane.
Wow, I'm so glad that I persevere, because there was just like... It was like, oh, there's only 5 minutes left, and I have to do something, and and I'm going to the monastery anyway tomorrow, so maybe I don't need to call. And
so you push through the resistance, eh?
Yeah. But it was just a little. It was like a facade, you know. It wasn't really that deep over the phone. But actually, my question. I was just checking the website, so I'm actually not sure this is a relevant question, but I had been wanting to ask about. Kind of a retreat question, going on the precepts retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe this year it's only for past people, actually. I was just checking. But
are we just doing a renewal this year? I can't remember.
That's what's
on
there.
Yeah.
I only see a renewal. So maybe, well, it was, anyway, what I had planned to talk about is... I think it just seemed to bring up a lot, and I remember Sherry saying something, you know, you can do the retreat or work on the precepts, you know, as a way to kind of see what comes up for you around that. So anyway, I guess I was just noticing that I had a lot of, I think there's a lot of beliefs. It's not even the precepts. Maybe it's about I think it's bringing up some rigid system within me that conditioning that I'm afraid would get triggered if I do the precepts.
Uh-huh. Well, I think I could probably guarantee that it would get triggered. That's one of the good things about precepts. I mean, not having had the experience, you don't really know, but you probably sense, and I bet your conditioning is sensing too, that, it's about commitment. And, that's, bringing, all of life into practice is really what the precepts is all about. And ask for kind of deep looking in a way that conditioning really wants us to avoid.
Maybe it's more for next year, but kind of what it, like on the surface, it's like, yes, okay, I want to do the precepts, the daily recitation, I've been doing it for a while, and it would be nice to really understand more some of these aspects, and they're all things that are intended to help us wake up, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They're not,
mm-hmm.
It's not like here's a rule for practice. It's like, we've found through experience that moving towards these guidelines can help people in their practice.
For sure. Well, what they do, I think, is they provide a mirror for us to run into. Because, like, as you say, and whenever you do end up doing a precepts retreat, because I bet you anything you will, that's what you'll find out is, we don't look at them as rules. It's not, there's nothing black and white or, cut and dry about it at all. It's, they're places to pay attention. They kind of reflect different areas in our life for us to pay attention to. And, there is no way to, there's no rule book. We have to really look and see, what does this precept mean for me right now in my life? What does this show me about where I am in my life and where I am in my practice and like that?
Mm-hmm.
So you can practice with the precepts, even before you...
I don't have to wait for the... Yeah.
You don't have to wait for the retreat. I do recommend the retreat, though, whenever you have the opportunity. Now, you probably know that, the precepts, as I said, it's kind of a big deal for us, and we recommend it for folks who have been around for a while, which you have. Folks who have their feet under them in terms of our practice, and have been to numerous retreats, and really are sort of ready to take the next step in terms of a commitment to practice. So I kind of say that for anybody who might be listening more than to you, but anyway, that's a big piece of it too.
Well, yeah, and I think the practice piece for me is that there's a lot of conditioning and stories around the meaning of that commit, it's somehow willing to commit to practice, but not necessarily to this practice. Or
mm-hmm.
I sort of describe like to say, okay, this is my, I am part of this community, or this is, this is a road I'm going down. Like, even though
mm-hmm.
I am already going down that road, and I find it really helpful,
mm-hmm.
but I know because I've, there's just something there for me to look at, like, oh no, something, you're going to get into trouble, or what if something doesn't work, or I can just see a lot coming up. So I just wanted to put it out there because I think it's something I've kind of been skirting around.
Yeah, that's great. That's exactly the kind of looking I think that the precepts is good for, that helps us look at those kind of things. And as well as I do that, conditioning hates commitment. It hates giving ourselves over to something other than it.
Mm-hmm.
Like for you to make essentially a public statement that says, yes, I care about this. This is important to me. I'm a part of this. This is what I do. That kind of thing is devastating to conditioning because, it's always trying to keep us, we're always supposed to waffle. And, never really commit to anything except for our relationship to it. We're always kind of hanging back, not really given ourselves completely except to this conversation of the mind about, you know, what's wrong with us and all the kind of stuff that it's trying to do all the time. And so to give ourselves to something other than it, especially something, you know, I think you would agree with me in terms of our practice, you know, larger, deeper, more compassionate, kinder, just bigger in a life-giving kind of a way, is, you know, not something conditioning can be interested in at all.
Yeah.
And I think as you approach this, and you've got, you know, as since we do just have the renewal this year, you're going to have a lot of time to look at it. You know, as you approach this, I think you'll see a lot about that, which was going to be really, really, really helpful.
Yes. Yeah, and you just reminded me, actually, now that I know we're up out of time, but that I think I need to put on my calendar the dates when I get on the show, because I, you know, I might listen to it right after, but then I forget when I actually called in, you know. So anyway, I was just thinking, oh, I better write down that I called in today so I can re-listen to this and remember which day it was.
That's a really good idea. Yeah, and you can kind of, you know, maybe a little bit down the road hear what you had to say and where you were and where you are now.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thank you. I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mary Jane.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. You've been listening to Open Air. Justin, it's been a tremendous pleasure and privilege to have you with us tonight.
Likewise, Michael.
Great. Yes. And we'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks
great.
For making it all happen.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay.
Thanks, Justin.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.